ब्रह्मणि प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे वांछा कल्पतरुर्भ्यस्य कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। पंचतत्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशक्तिकं। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम रामा हरे हरे। Hare Krishna. So we welcome all of you for this Sunday feast program here at ISKCON Shishi Radha Gopinath Mandir. So today we will be discussing something on a festival that is in the air. Yesterday many of us celebrated this festival of Makara Sankranti. Yes, a very auspicious, very traditional festival in the Indian calendar. So today we thought we'll share some insights about this festival of Makara Sankranti. I remember every time we used to see the New Year's calendar, you know, right on January 1st. This was the annual ritual that used to happen in my childhood, that I used to look at the calendar and see how many festivals happen to be on Sunday. Because dekhte the kitna holiday chhoot gaya. Right, we used to see how many holidays did we lose because, you know, festivals, you get, you know, holiday in schools or colleges, right? So the first thing that I would do is look at the annual calendar every year. That was like my January 1st ritual. I used to see how many days I lost this year. Right? Office wahi wahi hota hai. Exactly. Right? Maybe even more intensely. Right? So the more holidays you lose, the more you lament. Arey, this year doesn't seem to be a good year. Right? So, just a Vaishnava perspective on this particular aspect, that, you know, traditionally, the concept of a holiday, especially on a Sunday, losing today it's very common, we know that every Sunday is a holiday. But do you know that not all the time in the history of India was Sunday a holiday? Right? I was reading a particular historian's account of, you know, how the Indian culture was evolving. And so he actually mentions that somewhere in 1843, officially it was declared that Sunday was going to be a holiday. Until then there was no concept of a holiday on Sunday. Can you imagine? Every day office. No chutti to schools. Can you imagine? So you all are speechless here. We can't even imagine today a life without holiday. Right? But actually somewhere around 1843, there's one Charles Stewart Hardinge. He was the Governor General of India back then. So he was a war veteran and so on. So he actually wanted to announce, they wanted one day in a week as a holiday, and turned out they chose Sunday. And guess where it started from? Mumbai. It started from our own Mumbai, and slowly it spread all across India. And prior to that, for about 200 years, we had Friday as holiday when India was under the Mughal rule. And this also came about only around somewhere in mid-15th century. But can you imagine, before that, there were no holidays on Sundays. It was 7-day week. Right? Today we delight 5-day week. We like to join that company which has a 5-day week schedule. Saturday, Sunday, chutti chahiye. Right? But if you see, that was the beauty of the Vedic culture. In the Vedic culture, work itself was seen as divine. There was nothing called as holy work and unholy work. Our own respective occupational duties were seen as our very intimate connection with the divine. So therefore there was no need for a break. Every day was a holy day. We don't need a separate holiday. Right? Because every day, because your work is holy, the work itself is seen. So there was no question of a break. Every day was seen as your actions, your work was seen as a means of your divine connection. So therefore, if you see in the traditional Vedic culture, life itself was celebrated. If you look at the whole Indian calendar, if you look at the way, what sets apart the Vedic culture from any other culture is, where how everything was seen as celebration. If you look at, you know, the Indian culture, we identify it with words like colors, celebrations, foods, right? That is what our Vedic culture has been identified with. And that, those special days where life is celebrated, not just in a mundane sense, but life is celebrated in its connection with the divine, are the days of festivals. So therefore, these festivals are not just ordinary days, they are not just a random holiday, but rather they are to be seen as a very, very, very auspicious holy days. Right? So, today we'll try to understand more about this special festival of Makar Sankranti. There's so much to discuss about this. Let's see what our time permits. We'll try to share some insights on this festival. The Vedic way of looking at reality is on three different levels. Everything from people, events, life, festivals, everything is seen on three different levels. At the most basic level is the physical level. Right? You know, what is happening around us, just observe things on a very physical level. A second, a slightly more deeper level is looking at it from a metaphysical level. Something that doesn't really, that you just really, something that doesn't meet the eye, but there is some deeper level of reality to it. And the third level is a spiritual level. Physical, metaphysical and spiritual. So we'll try to look at this festival of Makar Sankranti from these three levels of reality. And we'll try to gather whatever lessons that we can learn about this festival. So, what is Sankranti? It comes from the Sanskrit word Samkranti or Samkramanam, which literally means crossing over or a transition. Right? You transit from one particular state to another state. So, who is transiting? We are all sitting here. We didn't go anywhere. So why are we celebrating this? Well, who's transiting? The sun. Surya. Right? The sun is transiting from one particular zodiac constellation to another zodiac constellation. So when the sun transits, it is called as a sankramanam or a samkranti. And according to the Vedic astronomy, there are 12 zodiac signs. Right? Everybody familiar with that? We always like to look at our forecast, our daily forecast, monthly forecast in the newspaper. So there is 12 zodiac signs. So the sun in one year transits through 12 different constellations. So there are 12 Sankrantis that happen in a year. But the most popular one happens to be what is called as Makara Sankranti, or where the sun transits from the Makara Rashi into the Makara Rashi, the Tropic of Capricorn. It transits into this particular zodiac sign. And it is considered a very auspicious, this is a physical observation that you will see that yes, now that, you know, based on our visual experience, the sun is transiting into a different constellation. But you may ask, why is something to celebrate? The sun is anyway transiting every day, but our life goes on. Right? We are worried if the Mumbai locals stop transiting. That is something of our interest, right? Or if something extraordinary is happening there. So our life is going on. So what is so special if the sun is transiting into this Makara constellation? Well, Apparently, this is the beginning of the spring season. When the sun transits the Makara Rashi, that is the time when you will see a difference in the now. Slowly the winter is starting to lose its effect. This year we had one of our very severe winters. I come from Govardhaniko village. Some of you might be knowing it as Vada Farm. And we had one of most severe winters this year. And I believe even in Mumbai, the weather has been, the mercury has been dipping. So this is the time when the weather will again come back to a very pleasant. It's not very hot, it's not very cold. So this particular time of the year is considered to be very pleasant. So, the spring season is described that how it brings about lot of change and positivity in the society. That is why it has been traditionally celebrated. Even modern psychologists actually admit that the number of complaints that they get are the least in this particular season, because somehow the mind adjusts to this, because right now in the nature there is everything is blossoming. There's a new hope coming in nature. So what is happening in the macrocosm also affects the microcosm within us. So the mind is automatically more happy, peaceful and blissful. Right? That is why traditionally people would celebrate this particular day. Now is auspicious time beginning. Right? In fact, even the Bhagavad Gita, when Lord Krishna had to describe, he describes his opulences in the Vibhuti Yoga, he describes how you can connect with the most supreme things in nature as Krishna. And he talks at how Rutunam Kusuma Aksharkara. He says, among all the Rutus, among all the seasons, I am the Kusuma Akara. Kusuma is that blossoming. So that season where the blossoming takes place, the spring season, I am that spring season. Like that. So Prabhupada writes in that particular purport. Of course, spring season is a season universally light because it is neither too hot nor too cold, and the flowers and trees blossom and flourish. In spring, there are also many ceremonies commemorating Krishna's pastimes. Therefore, it is considered to be the most joyous of all seasons, and it is the representative of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Therefore, the spring season, which brings about this hope and change, the onset of that season is this particular day of Makara Sankranti. In fact, even traditionally, this particular time of the year is considered very auspicious for performing many yajnas. Varieties of yajnas. Even education would begin around in this particular season. We hear that in the episode of Jada Bharat, those of you are familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fifth canto, the description comes that, Jada Bharat's father tried his best to educate him, and he says specifically he chose his most auspicious spring time to begin his education, hoping that something this fellow will understand. But somehow, it didn't work out for him so much. Also, this particular time of the year, astronomically it is said that the sun has already begun its ascent in the northern direction. Right? So that is, in our Vedic astronomy, it is called as the Uttarayana Kala. So post the winter solstice, that's the time when we have the longest night of the year. After that, the sun starts descending on the northern side. And post the Sankranti, it is even more clearly visible. So therefore, this particular time, because the sun is on the rise, sun symbolically in the Vedic language has been connected with all auspiciousness, knowledge and wisdom. So therefore, post this particular day of Makara Sankranti, it is described how our hearts become brighter and happier. That is why it has been traditionally celebrated as a day of joyous hope and change in the society. That is the reason why, what do we do in Maharashtra on Makara Sankranti? What do we exchange? Tilgud, right? We exchange sweets. We exchange, especially Tilgud. Til is also in the Vedic rituals, it is considered very auspicious. So we exchange Tilgud, inviting this auspicious change in the society and in our hearts. So it's very, so on a physical plane itself, you can see there are so many such, positivity that is associated with this festival of Makara Sankranti. But then, going little more deeper on a metaphysical plane, something that which we really can't see and perceive directly with our eye, but our scriptures explain that you know, even for the demigods, the devatas as we know in our Vedic culture, even for them, this Makara Sankranti is a time of auspiciousness. Because it is described that the planets of the devatas, we cannot perceive them. And one of the reasons why we cannot directly perceive them is because they operate on a different time scale. Like we human beings, we have a 24-hour clock, right? But for the devatas, they also have a 24-hour clock, but their one day extends to 6 months for us. And likewise, their one night extends to our human 6 months. So this Sankranti is the beginning of their day. So starting from here, the 6 months when the sun is moving in the northern direction is the daytime for the devatas, the demigods as well. So therefore, it is considered very auspicious time even for the devatas. So even at a metaphysical level, you'll see a lot of auspiciousness being generated. Because who are these demigods after all? They are the universal administrators, universal controllers. So you'll start seeing a lot of auspicious things happening. That is why in the Vedic calendar, this particular day has been celebrated. In fact, there's a very interesting Puranic story. Many of you from Maharashtra might have already heard this story. That it is particularly described that on this particular day, Surya, he visits the house of one of his sons. Right? So one very popular, demigod. Many of you, after, coming to the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, might have forgotten his name. Right? But his name is Mr. Shani. Right? So Mr. Shani happens to be one of the very popular demigods in Indian culture. Right? So, because for obvious reasons, many of you know. Right? So interestingly it is described, one of the Puranic stories describes that Shani and Surya were, though they were father and son, they were not very compatible people. You know, they used to have a little tiff all the time. But apparently on this particular day, when the day begins, Surya happens to visit Shani and, kind of like patch up. So on a metaphysical plane, we can understand that this is the day where one is supposed to resolve one's old conflicts. One is supposed to resolve one's grudges against people. We always carry grudges in our heart with different people, right? So this is the day when you're actually supposed to resolve these grudges and conflicts, and that is why we distribute sweets. That is, we distribute tilgud on this particular day because we want to begin a new journey in our social relationships. Interestingly, the day after Sankranti, that is today, if you see the Vaishnava calendar, it is also described, you will see a particular festival called as the Ganga Sagar Mela. Ganga Sagar is a location in West Bengal where Ganga actually meets the Sagar, the Indian Ocean. And there's a huge festival that is conducted there. Even today it's been carrying forward for many generations. So there's a long historic story. We'll not go into all the details, but many of you must have heard about Maharaj Bhagirath, right? He's associated with a lot of determination and a strong will, because he took up the great, almost impossible task of getting Mother Ganga into this Bhumandal, into this earthly planetary system. And he had to go through a lot of tapasya. Why did he do that? Because he wanted to deliver his 60,000 ancestors who got cursed due to a particular offense that they had committed. And the only way he could have been delivered, all these ancestors could be delivered, is only if Mother Ganga were to, if there was sparsha, if only way Mother Ganga would touch these, they were literally burned to ashes, only when Mother Ganga would touch their ashes. That is the only way they could be delivered. So Bhagirath did this whole, he went to a great deal of ordeal to actually let Mother Ganga descend onto this particular Bhuma, into this planetary system. And finally, this is the day when actually Mother Ganga merges into, from the Bay of Bengal, she enters into the Sagar. So it's very, considered very auspicious that you'll see millions, Prabhupada mentions about this one of his purpose, that how millions of people, they take bath in the holy waters of Mother Ganga on this day in Ganga Sagar. So it is considered very, so on this day of Makara Sankranti, many ardent devotees, they take bath in holy rivers. Again, to get a fresh beginning, to create auspiciousness in their life. But, you know, from a spiritual perspective, you know, there are the understanding of what is auspicious and what is inauspicious completely changes. Right? And great stalwart devotees, through their personal life, they have exhibited what is the understanding of auspicious and inauspicious. And a very, very great historical event took place on this particular day of Makara Sankranti many, many years back. And on this particular day is when the glorious grandsire of the Kuru dynasty, Bhishma Pitamaha, Bhishma Deva, he left his body. So it's a very interesting account which is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is described that how we all know the story of Kurukshetra, one of the biggest battles ever to have been witnessed in the history took place. And practically the whole of Kuru dynasty was wiped off. But then Bhishma Dev, he had this boon of Ichha Mrityu, which means he could leave his body whenever he would like. So he did not want to quit his body on this particular, during the normal time, but he wanted to wait till the auspicious time of his Uttarayana Kala, when the sun begins his northern ascent, begins. He wanted to wait till that particular moment. So here was Bhishma Dev lying in the battlefield, pierced with arrows. It is described that every single inch of his body was pierced with arrows. And he was lying there on a bed of arrows. Right? And at that moment, Lord Krishna, he instructs the Pandavas. Because the Pandavas, they became the rightful, they gained the throne of the Kuru dynasty. And they all wanted, after becoming the kings and emperors, the unrivaled emperors of the world, they wanted to go and meet their grandfather. And now can you imagine, it's a very, Bhishma Dev here is in a very painful situation with all the arrows piercing his body. And normally when we go to meet somebody, say who's deceased, says if you want to go meet your near and dear ones in the hospital, right? How do you go and visit them? Right? Do you go and visit with all the pomp and gaiety, like, you know, with all the adambar? Will you go and visit them with all the, you know, you just go in a very sorrowful mood, with very sober mood, right? But look what Krishna instructs the Pandavas. He says, all of you should wear your best clothes. Dress yourself up with the best jewelry possible. And you should all go there, stand before Bhishma Dev, exhibiting your royal opulence. And they did not understand, the Pandavas did not understand, why Krishna is asking us to go in such a sober situation, why is he asking us to go like this, you know, showing off our opulence. So as soon as the Pandavas go there, well dressed, opulently befitting their royal order, they go stand there before Bhishma Dev. Immediately Bhishma Dev becomes completely happy. So happy that even he forgets for a moment, he forgets his own physical pain. Right? That shows, that one act shows the greatness of a Mahajan like Bhishma Dev. Right? Because you can know the greatness of any person, how happy one is in spite of one's personal misery. How happy we are for others' welfare in spite of one's own personal misery. Because the normal human psychology is, the moment we are under even slightest of the difficulties, we want the whole world to know about it. Right? Even if a small little finger gets hurt, you know, say imagine somebody's little finger gets hurt and they ended up, you know, getting it bandaged. You know, so how, when we go to office, workplace or school or wherever we go, you know, How do we deal ourselves? You know, we are constantly like this. You know, if you want to lift a bag, you know, lift something, we do it like this. So the whole world takes note of the fact that, you know, we injured ourselves. And we want people to come and ask us, kya ho gaya Prabhuji? What happened to your finger? Right? Because that is the case. We may think, it's not that we are being very proud of ourselves. We are just only looking for others' sympathy. But even that craving for sympathy is also a sign of false ego. It is just a different side. It is just a case of depressed false ego. But nevertheless, it is our ahankar only, the false ego, which is making us do that. Right? So here is Bhishma Dev, where every inch of his body is pierced with arrows, and still he is very, non-pretentiously, he is expressing genuine happiness for somebody else, for the Pandavas. Right? That shows that the greatness of this personality like Bhishma Dev. And because he exhibited this wonderful selfless quality at the time of his death, great saintly personalities from all over the world came there. In fact, Bhagavatam describes that great people like Parvat Muni, Narada, Dhaumya, Vyasa, Bhadrashva, Parshurama, Vashishta, Tirtha, Asita, Gautama, Atri, Kaushika, Sukadeva, Kashyapa, Angirasa, all these great personalities, the who and who of the world were there to witness this glorious departure of Bhishma Dev. What more proof is needed than the presence of these great personalities? And very wonderful principle of etiquette Bhagavatam highlights. When all these great personalities came to meet Bhishma Dev, Bhishma Dev was completely, incapable of moving. He was just lying there on this bed of arrows. But the Vedic etiquette is that when some great personalities come, you are supposed to receive them. You are supposed to give them some basic hospitality. So what hospitality will a man lying on his deathbed give? Right? Still, Bhishma Dev exhibits this dharma. Even though he could not physically move, even though he could not offer them a chappan bhog feast when they came, but what did he do? He with his pleasing smile, he spoke some sweet words and welcomed all these great personalities. And Prabhupada highlights there a very beautiful point. One can perform one's duty by physical work, by mind and by words. And he knew well how to utilize them in proper place. Therefore, there was no difficulty for him to receive them, although physically unfit. This shows that there can be practically no impediments in our Krishna consciousness. No situation can be so unfavorable that one will not be able to perform one's duties. Here is Bhishma Dev, Mahajan Bhishma Dev, exhibiting by his personal example that how even the most, unfavorable situation, he was able to perform his duty. What more to speak about all of us, right? And then amidst that pain and misery, he starts empathizing with the difficulties that the Pandavas had undergone. He starts saying, Aho kashtam aho anyayam yad yuyam dharmanandana jeevitum na hritum klishtam vipra dharma achyuta ashraya. He says, Aho kashtam aho anyayam. My God, what great miseries, what great injustice you Pandavas had to face all your life. Right? Can you imagine? Apparently the situation looks like he is the person who is under injustice. The person who shot all the arrows is standing right in front of him. Arjuna is standing right in front of him and he is empathizing for Arjuna and other Pandavas. Can you imagine? This is the quality of Mahajan Bhishma Dev. Here he is saying that what great terrible sufferings and injustice you great souls had to suffer. Jeevitum na arhatum. You people did not deserve to live, in a sense that it was impossible that you people actually survived. But there is only one reason, one thing that protected all of you. Because vipra dharma achyuta ashraya. Because you all took ashraya, because you took shelter of these three things. Vipra, the brahmanas, the righteous people, the devotees of the Lord. Dharma, religion, righteousness. entry, Achyuta, the Supreme Lord himself. Because you took shelter of these three things, right? That is the reason why you are able to overcome these difficulties. And that's a valuable lesson that Bhishma Dev is teaching to us. That even amidst the great calamities that we all are bound to face in life, what is it that we really need to take shelter of? We need to take shelter of the association of devotees. We need to take shelter of righteousness. And we ultimately need to take shelter of the Supreme Lord himself. That is what this morning some of you who are here, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, he was talking about this aspect of taking ashray of Krishna, ashray of the holy name, right? In regard to one of the questions that was asked, he was highlighting this principle of how we need to take ashray, shelter. That is what is, you know, Sri Krishna Sharanam, that mood of Sharanam is that aspect that again here Mahajan Bhishmadev is describing. But then, after having described this, Bhishmadev is going to throw at us a very interesting philosophical dilemma. Right? I'll read that particular verse and then we'll discuss on that. He tries to rationally explain why the Pandavas were suffering. Right? So he says, because if you look at the Pandavas, they had everything, the best combination was there with them. In fact, later on he says, Yatta Dharmasuto Rajan, Dharmasuta, the Dharma personified, Yudhishthir Maharaj was there with them. Gadapanir Vrikodara, Krishna Astri Gandivam Chapam. So the two best warriors who existed on the planet at that time, Bhima and Arjuna, were there on the side of the Pandavas. Suhrut Krishna Stato Vipat. Even who was their best friend of the Pandavas? Lord Krishna. So Dharma personified the best warriors, Bhima and Arjuna, and Krishna himself was there on the side of Pandavas. Yet, they had to face all these obstacles. And this is a big challenge. Right? We always, you know, wonder that, you know, why am I the only person who's suffering? Why God is doing these things to me? Why am I suffering? We'd like to ask these questions. So here is the reason that Bhishmadev is trying to say. He says, Sarvam kala kritam manye bhavatam chayad apriyam sapalo yad vashe loko vayor iva ghanavalihi. Just like how the wind, it just blows away. Sometimes you see, the wind just carries away the clouds. We will not even notice. But for a moment you see the cloud is here. And imperceptibly, the cloud just moves to a different spot. Just like that, he says, all of this is happening due to inevitable time, under whose control everyone on this planet is just being carried. So he says, the reason why you all are suffering, even though you had the best combination, materially, spiritually, the Pandavas had the best combination, but still, they were suffering in their life. There was inauspiciousness in their life. Why? Bhishma Dev is saying that it's all happening due to the effect of time. And Prabhupada writes a brilliant purport to that. Prabhupada writes, despite the power of pious acts, the power of personalities, the power of expert management, the power of weapons, under the direct supervision of Lord Krishna, the Pandavas suffered so many practical reverses, which can only be explained due to the influence of Kala or inevitable time. So they had best weapons, best personalities, expert management, everything was best with the Pandavas, but still they had to suffer because of the influence of time. And then Prabhupada goes on to write, Kala is identical with the Lord himself, and therefore the influence of Kala indicates the inexplicable wish of the Lord himself. There is nothing to be lamented when a matter is beyond the control of any human being. So here is this time, the effect of time, which is described as an inexplicable wish of the Lord. You cannot explain why it is happening, but ultimately it is happening by the will of the Lord. And here is this big philosophical dilemma that we all are thrown at. So why all the suffering is happening? Because of time. And what is time that we saw here? The will of the Lord. So therefore, why are we suffering? The will of the Lord. So does it mean Lord wants us to suffer? Yes or no? How many of you say no? Raise your hand. See, majority is saying yes. Right? Well, this is the dilemma that we need to resolve. If you really want to understand Krishna, if you really want to develop a relationship with Krishna, we have to somehow resolve this dilemma. Because this question always comes. Right? Whenever some reversals happen in our life, some unfavorable situation comes in our life, we think, ye mere saath kyun kar rahe ho Bhagawan aise? Right? Why me? Right? Everybody else is suffering. If everybody else is suffering, then you don't mind so much. You know, as the saying goes, misery loves company. Right? But when you are that special chosen one, right? When that troublesome situation happens in your life alone, then you start questioning. Why is it happening with me? Right? So, to understand this, Srila Prabhupada explains that the philosophy that we follow, which is called as Achintya Bedha Abhedha Tattva, it helps us in understanding, reconciling these two apparent contradictions here. Does Krishna wants us to suffer, or what exactly is happening? So if you look carefully, here we said that time is a cause of our suffering. But if you psychologically analyze the way the human mind works, if the cause of your suffering and the cause of your savior, if both are the same, you are in the most miserable position. I repeat, that which can save you and that which is causing your suffering, if both are the same person, you are the most miserable person in this planet. Because whom will you turn to? Right? If Krishna is the one who is my savior, and if he is the one who is causing me to suffer, what will happen? I will become depressed. And lack of this understanding of this Krishna Tattva is causing many people to think like this. Right? Many, you know, how many of you thought like this at least once in your life? You know, that Krishna, I don't want to turn to you. Right? Many times this feeling gets even more accentuated by our Bollywood. You see all those famous fiery dialogues that the hero, he goes to the temple and starts blasting all his dialogues, that famous dialogue saying that, you know, oh God, why did you do this? So and so, blah, 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 blah. Right? And we also get convinced, yeah, 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 God is the cause of our suffering. Right? Then why I should surrender to God? Right? And this is how atheism is spreading today, thanks to this kind of propaganda. But our philosophy doesn't say that. Our philosophy says that yes, the Achintya Bedha Bedha Tattva explains that how Krishna and his energies are one and also different. So our acharyas explain this in a very interesting way. They explain that this, when it comes to looking at the cause of our suffering, they attribute this kala effect, the time effect. But even though, because you see, the way the mind works is, we always need a rational explanation for the cause of our suffering. Mujhe mere samne, you know, I want to see some person, this is the reason why you are suffering. I want to see that. If I do not identify the cause of my suffering, I cannot just say artificially, it just happens. It just happens doesn't work, Prabhu. It may work for you. You may be very advanced. But for me, I want a cause of suffering. Kyun hua mere saath? I want to know that. Until then, you will not get solace. Right? So our philosophy explains, okay, you want a reason for your suffering? Okay, here is the reason of your suffering. The person sitting next to you is not the cause of your suffering. The government is not the cause of your suffering. This particular people that you identify as your enemies, they are not the cause of your suffering. It is all happening because of the inevitable time. If there is anything that you want to blame, you can blame this time factor. And you see repeatedly in all the prayers of all the devotees in Bhagavatam, whenever any apparent suffering comes, they just say, this is happening due to destiny, this is happening due to kala effect. Right? But, on one side, while they are simultaneously blaming time for their suffering, at the same time, they surrender to the master of time, that is Krishna. And this is the Achintya Bheda Bheda. Prabhupada explains this concept in 17th canto of Purport, that in according to our philosophy, though this time is the cause of your suffering, but if you surrender to the master of the time, Krishna, he can extricate us from this suffering. So therefore, we have to understand this aspect very strongly, that whom are we here trying to develop a relationship with? When we come to this process of Krishna consciousness, right? It is not just any consciousness, it is Krishna consciousness, which means we have to understand how Krishna thinks. We have to understand whom are we trying to develop a relationship with. Who is that person standing in the altar and smiling at us? What does it take to develop a relationship with this person? Right? If you want to develop a relationship with any person, you first try to know the person, right? You don't just randomly go and develop a relationship. It's not just like saying, clicking the friend button on Facebook. Right? Randomly, if so many requests keep coming, you just say, okay to everyone, right? But bhakti is not like that. We have to understand who is the person that we are trying to develop a relationship with. Right? So we have to understand this nature of the Lord, that when you want to develop a relationship with Him, we have to understand His nature. Right? And one very interesting verse comes in the Bhagavatam, which describes Krishna's nature. And this particular verse might scare some of you. So please be ready to hear this verse. This verse comes in the 4th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the connection to a story of the Prachetas. And in this verse, every line, Krishna is addressed in a very unique way. I'll read that verse. It says, Iti Pracheto Bhir Abhishuto Harihi Pritas Tatha Aha Sharanya Vatsalaha Anichittam Yanam Atrupt Chakshusham Yayo Swadhamna Apavarga Viraha. It says, Iti Pracheto Bhir. So the whole episode is, Prachetas were these great devotees of the Lord, and they do tapasya underwater for many years. For many years they perform this tapasya, and finally, pleased by their austerities and the unity that they exhibited, Lord Vishnu personally comes before them. And He grants them all the wishes. And this is the scene where the whole episode, the whole exchange of benedictions is over. And finally the Lord is about to leave from that spot. And that scene, try to imagine the scene. Here are the Prachetas standing there. Iti Prachetobir Abhishuto Harihi. Right? Abhishuta is being praised. So just now, Lord praises all the Prachetas saying, and here is Lord described as Hari. Hari here means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? So here is Krishna on the first line glorified as the Supreme Lord. And in second line, He is glorified. Okay, why is Krishna leaving? He may be the Supreme Lord, He may be a great person, but every great person doesn't necessarily have compassion in their heart. Right? There are so many rich people in the world, there are so many great and influential people in the world. But does it mean everybody is compassionate? Not necessary, right? But the second line says, Pritas tataha sharanya vatsalaha. Here is Krishna being described here as sharanya vatsala. Sharanya vatsala, bhakta vatsala. So one who surrenders, anybody who surrenders unto Krishna, Krishna becomes extremely pleased. Vatsala, vatsa, the word comes from, from cows. If you ever seen a cow, how she takes care of her calf, right? So there is nothing more pure, there is no greater exhibition of pure love than what a mother cow exhibits to her calf. And that mood times a zillion is what Krishna exhibits towards His devotees, to the people who surrender unto Him. Bhagavan Sharanya Vatsala. So it is not that Krishna was just Hari, the supreme powerful, almighty Lord, but he was also having compassion in his heart. Then somebody may say, okay, maybe the Lord is all powerful, maybe he has compassion in his heart, but maybe the Prachetas didn't want the Lord around for a long time. Unka ho gaya abhi, you know, Bhagwan aage vardan de diya, bole chalo bhai jao vapas. Maybe they don't want the Lord to stay there for a long time. Maybe they want the Lord to leave now. That is why Lord is leaving. No, the third line explains, Anichitam yanam atrupta chakshusham. So how are the Prachetas standing there? Atrupta chakshusha. Chakshu means eyes. Atrupta means unsatisfied. So from their eyes they were exhibiting, you know, sometimes you can speak through your eyes itself. You don't need words. Through their eyes, the Prachetas were literally begging the Lord, my dear Lord, we are unsatisfied. Please stay for some more time. Don't leave us now. Please stay. So they were showing, just through their eyes, they were exhibiting their dissatisfaction. My dear Lord, please do not leave. So you can see, the Lord is all powerful. There are no obligations for him. It is not that, abhi chalo bhai, abhi train chhoot raha hai, mujhe bhagna hai. Nahin. He is all powerful. Nothing can control him. Not only is he all powerful, he also has compassion in his heart, his sharanya vatsala. Not only does he have compassion in his heart, even the devotees are also saying, please stay. Everything is perfectly suitable, but why is the Lord leaving? The last line says, yayau swadhamna apavarga viraha. So here is Krishna described as anaparga viraha. That means one whose prowess is never defeated. So Prabhupada writes that why Krishna is so great that he is never defeated? Because Krishna has these six opulences. Right? And one of the opulences of, we all know the six opulences, right? Can somebody list them? Strength, knowledge, beauty, wealth, intellect, and the last one of renunciation. So Krishna, Prabhupada writes in this purport, a very scary line for many practicing devotees. He says, Krishna, because he is filled with the six opulences and one of the opulences is renunciation, sometimes Krishna can also renounce his devotees. Why? To increase that feeling of separation from them. And to purify them. Because that fire of separation intensifies one's hankering for Krishna. And that is the reason why sometimes even great devotees undergo tribulations in their life. In fact, one very interesting episode that comes in Mahabharata only, that one time Yudhishthir Maharaj, he goes to Krishna and says, my dear Lord Krishna, please give me a benediction. He says, wow. Krishna is like, Yudhishthir Maharaj, you are asking, why not? I mean, I am sold out for you. Please tell me what you want. He says, please bless me that I become the most wealthiest man on this planet. Please bless me that I become the most powerful king on this planet. Please bless me that, you know, I become the most strongest person on this planet. And as he's saying, you know, Lord Krishna for a moment is thinking, are you alright? Something wrong with you today? Because this is not Yudhishthir Maharaj's mood. Right? Why is he asking all these material benedictions? So then, you know, Yudhishthir Maharaj tells, my dear Lord, it pains my heart when people blaspheme you. You know? Because when people see the lives of when the people see our lives, the lives of Pandavas, this is really bad PR for you. Right? Because if you look at the life of Pandavas, as we just saw earlier, right? Everything was right. They were spiritually minded, they were materially very opulent, you know, strong in terms of their skills, but still everything went wrong in their life. So if somebody sees, if Krishna's devotees are like this, then maybe I think we will think twice before becoming Krishna Bhaktas. Right? But look at somebody else, like, you know, he actually tells that, you know, if you look at Lord Shiva's devotees, they are full of opulence. Though Lord Shiva himself lives under a tree, right, they don't see that. But then, see, look at Lord Shiva's devotees. So everybody will say, no, we don't want to become Krishna Bhaktas. Right? But, so if you give us this benediction, then people will be happy that, yeah, now, you know, it's good to become Krishna Bhaktas. So Yudhishthira Maharaj is praying like that, asking like that, just to show that, you know, it is not easy to be a devotee of the Lord, because the Lord does not want us to just have a fancy material opulence, but he really wants us to attain the real spiritual wealth, that spiritual opulence. And that is the reason why he makes his devotees go through these different trials and tribulations. And that is exhibited in the life of Mahajan Bhishma Dev. So his whole life was an example of this one principle, that how the Lord tests the devotees even until their last breath. The test was not over even the last breath, because he was not sure when he would die also. So, and then through the life of Bhishma Dev, he has exhibited this one important virtue that we all have to learn, especially that Makara Sankranti day is actually exhibiting this, that how, you know, ultimately it is not just about attaining some kind of a worldly opulence, but because Krishna is Sharanya Vatsal, he may test us all through our life, but at the final moment, he is going to come and protect us and save us. And that is exhibited in the life of Bhishma Dev. Krishna himself was personally standing there along with the Pandavas, and he says, you know, lying there on the bed of arrows, he says, you think this Krishna who is standing next to you, he is your cousin? If you think so, you are all mistaken. He is none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And you can understand the love that Bhishma Dev, the devotion that Bhishma Dev had in his heart. Right? You know, imagine, just random exercise, if I may ask you to do now. Just think of one person whom you like the most in your life. Any one person whom you completely admire. Anybody in the world. It could be your parent, your favorite teacher, maybe your spouse, or maybe some sports star, I don't know, whom you worship every day, right? Anybody, any one person, any one living person in your life, remember that person, right? And try to think of a list of good qualities that they have. Just a random exercise. I'll give you 20 seconds. Right? Your time starts now. Think of as many good qualities about that person that you can think of. Your time starts now. 20 seconds. Keep counting how many numbers you're getting. Last 5 seconds. Okay, stop. Okay, how many of you got 20 or more good qualities? Okay, none. How many of you got 15 or more good qualities? Okay, one person. How many of you got 10 or more good qualities? Okay, 5 or more good qualities. Okay, good. Now, we are sitting in a nice, comfortable AC hall. Right? And we know after the class there is going to be a wonderful feast awaiting us. No anxieties in life. Happily we are sitting here, and we were told to think about our favorite person. Not any random person. I told you, your most favorite person. And we managed to get about 10 good qualities about them. Right? Bhishma Dev, at that moment, lying there on the battlefield, not in an AC hall, not in a very comfortable position, with every inch of his body pierced with arrows. In one shot, he recited the Vishnu Sahasranam. What does Vishnu Sahasranam mean? 1,000 glorifications of his Ishtadev, his dear Lord. We barely managed to get 20. Right? Even if I were to give you more time, I doubt if you will ever hit even 50 or 100. Right? But Bhishma Dev at that moment recited the Vishnu Sahasranam, 1000 names, every name of Krishna glorifying one very special attribute. That is devotion at its supreme level. And that is what this particular day of Makara Sankranti is exhibiting, that in that state of consciousness, in that supreme love for Krishna, Bhishma Dev left his body. That is the example that he is giving us, that this is what we should be doing. This is how we should be leading our life. Bhishma Dev was not, you know, he was as much involved in the material affairs as probably any one of us are in this hall, right? He was not a sadhu baba sitting somewhere in Himalayas and always meditating about Krishna. No, he was in the thick of action. He was in the right in the middle of all that political drama which was happening there at that time. And still, he led his life in such a way that under the most trying circumstances at the last moment of his life, he could remember his dear Lord. And so much so, his remembrance was so strong and intense that Krishna, that it completely, it dragged Krishna to manifest right there in front of him. And right there in front of Krishna and all his devotees, Bhishma Dev left his body. That is the glorious departure of Bhishma Dev that took place on this particular day of Makara Sankranti. That. So, this is the mood. Now what, I'll conclude with this one point, that what does it take then to get that absorption like Bhishma Dev? Right? What does it take to really become intense in our devotional practice like Bhishma Dev? Right, because the example that is setting. So to understand this, remember we began this discussion by saying there is a material way of looking at this festival, there is a physical, a metaphysical, and there's a spiritual. To understand this, we need to go to the fourth dimension now. A reason even beyond anything else. Because on this particular day of Makara Sankranti, something very extraordinary happened. Some event that took place on this Makara Sankranti day led to appearance of two very special incarnations. Two very special avataras appeared on this particular day of Makara Sankranti. Anybody familiar? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't appear on Makara Sankranti. Anybody knows those two incarnations that took place, that took birth, or rather manifested on this special, due to the event on this special occasion? We'll see that. Because on this particular day, as some of you rightly pointed out, we know this day is the day when Lord Chaitanya accepted sannyas on this particular auspicious day of Makara Sankranti. And the events that led to this reveal something very interesting and something very hope-giving for all the practicing sadhakas. So we are rewinding the clock back by a little over 550 years and we are zooming in our camera to the holy place of Navadvip. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu he had already met his spiritual master Ishwarapuri, and he's already started the Sankirtan movement in the holy land of Navadvip. But then Mahaprabhu would sometimes, amidst all the different loving exchanges that he would have with his devotees, sometimes he would show some very ecstatic symptoms. Vrindavandas Thakur explains in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Ekadina Gopi Bhave Jagata Ishwara Vrindavana Gopi Gopi Bale Nirantara. That Ekadina Gopi Bhave Jagat Ishwara. Jagat Ishwara, that's the Supreme Lord of the universe, in his ecstatic mood of the gopis of Vrindavan, he started loudly chanting, Vrindavan, Vrindavan, Gopi, Gopi, and Nimai Pandit, he started chanting like that. And then, as he was doing so, one of Nimai's students came there. He looked at Nimai, why are you chanting the names of Gopi, Gopi? Stop chanting these names of Gopi. Where in the scriptures it is mentioned that one should chant the names of gopis? In fact, we should chant the names of Krishna. Right? But somehow Mahaprabhu was so absorbed, he was in a completely different trance. And the moment he heard this argument from the student, he said, chant the names of Krishna? Well, Mahaprabhu actually says that Krishna, he is a rogue. Look at what this Krishna did. He mercilessly cut off the ears and nose of another woman. And he mercilessly killed Vali for some different, for a cause which is no fault of his. I will never chant the names of this Krishna. And Mahaprabhu went into this mood, in a totally ecstatic mood. We cannot really comprehend. This is a very advanced subject matter, that mood that Mahaprabhu is in. Because he was so absorbed in remembrance of, in that mood of the Vrajavasis. Because it is described that, when Mahaprabhu spoke like that, that student completely got bewildered. He said, what is this? And so much so that he started chasing that student with a stick. And the student had to run away from that place. And he couldn't understand what has happened. So then as soon as he heard this argument, he goes to all the other students and says, you know what happened today? What Nimai Pandit did? He was chanting his names of Gopi, Gopi, and I went and mildly corrected him, saying that, why are you doing this? And he started blaspheming Krishna. Not only did he start blaspheming Krishna, now he expressed his real concern. He started chasing me with a stick. And you know, I barely managed to survive. It is only because of Krishna's grace that I survived and I'm standing before you others. He would have killed me. Not that he would kill him, but you know how we like to report things. Right? So that with that same exaggerated tone, he went and criticized. So then all the students, he got together and says, "Are, what kind of this, did he become overnight? Did he become Mahabhagavat devotee all of a sudden overnight?" Right? We are also Brahmanas. Why should we respect Nimai Pandit? Let us all go and punish him for this act. And as they were discussing like this, Mahaprabhu, as because he is the Supreme Lord, he is present as Paramatma in the heart, he could sense this animosity that was being developed in the hearts of the residents of Navadvip. So then Mahaprabhu one day, as he was sitting with all his associates, he says, Karila pipali khanda kafani varite uthaiya aro kafa badhila dehite. He says, Karila pipali khanda. Pipali, some of you who are into naturopathy and know about the herbs, there's a particular herb called as pipali. The leaves of that particular, you know, like adulsa, pipali, these are very famous herbs that are used for, you know, for any, if the throat is congested with mucus, cough, to as a treatment for cough, this particular pipali is used. So Mahaprabhu gives a very cryptical message here. He says that I brought this medicine of pipali khanda to remove the excess mucus, but instead of clearing the mucus in the body, it is creating more and more mucus. It is only aggravating the situation. So when Mahaprabhu made this statement, nobody understood this. What is pipali? What cough? We are all having nice throat. None of us are having cough here. So nobody understood this message of Mahaprabhu. But one person sitting there understood. That was Lord Nityananda. Nityananda Mahaprabhu, he understood that, it means Mahaprabhu is planning something different now. Because he is seeing, Mahaprabhu came to give the Sankirtan movement, but in the process of giving this Sankirtan movement, instead of purifying the hearts and instead of becoming more favorable towards Krishna and towards Mahaprabhu himself, people are developing more animosity towards Krishna. They are becoming more inimical towards himself. So therefore, Mahaprabhu said, now I have to change my strategy. Looks like Mahaprabhu is going to leave all of us and take sannyas. And Nityananda Prabhu becomes very morose. And true to his inhibition, his doubt, Mahaprabhu one day calls Nityananda Mahaprabhu and tells him that I am very soon going to take sannyas. And Nityananda Prabhu becomes completely heartbroken. But then he doesn't protest. He says, my dear Lord, you are Swatantra Ishwar, you are supremely independent. You can do whatever you want, but at least please ask your devotees what they feel about it. And then you can do whatever you choose. So Mahaprabhu says, okay, yes.
And then he goes to meet Mukunda, he meets Gadadhar and few other Vaishnavas, he tells them. And every person, when they hear this news, they feel as if a thunderbolt has struck their head. They felt like their life was completely devastated. They just couldn't imagine, how can Mahaprabhu take sannyas? What does it mean, a life without having Mahaprabhu? Right? And they all start lamenting. And at that moment, Mahaprabhu reveals about these two special incarnations that he is going to take. We already know that Mahaprabhu is a special incarnation of Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. But then, there, Mahaprabhu reveals about these two special incarnations that he is going to take. He says, Eimata aro ache dui avatar, kirtana ananda rupe haibe amar. He says, Eimata aro ache dui avatar. He says, do not lament, O my dear devotees. I am going to take two more incarnations. What are the two incarnations? Kirtana ananda rupe haibe avatar. So Mahaprabhu here is predicting that after I take sannyas, I will personally manifest in the form of this sankirtan. Kirtana, and the second is ananda rupe. What ananda? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, he explains that this ananda is specifically describing the Lord's Satchinananda Rupa Vigraha as the Archamurti, as the deity. So as soon as Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he said that I will manifest myself in these two forms. In fact, when Mother Sachi also, when the news spreads to Mother Sachi that, you know, Mahaprabhu is going to take sannyas, she also becomes depressed. Are you already, your elder brother Vishwarupa has already taken sannyas, now why do you want to take sannyas? Right, you can stay at home and you can perform your kankirtan. So then again Mahaprabhu gives him assurance that Arudui janma e sankirtan arambe haibe tomara putra ami avilambe mora archa murti mata tumi se dharani jiva rupa tumi mata namera janani. He says, mora archa murti mata tumi se dharani. So you will manifest as Mother Earth, because the archa murti is made out of clay or stone, which is coming from Mother Earth. He says, in my avatar as the Archamurti, Sachi Mata, you are non-different as Mother Earth. And then, Jiva Rupe Tumi Mata, Namera Janani. And in my incarnation as the holy name, you are the Jiva Rupa, that throat, that mood of a devotional, of a devotee, who intensely prays, that mood is Sachi Mata's mood, Mahaprabhu says. So basically here, we understand that on this particular Makara Sankranti day, when Lord Chaitanya, when he took sannyas, just to intensify that mood of separation in the hearts of the residents of Navadvip, but simultaneously he manifested himself in these two very special forms as Nama and Archa Vigraha. And we see that Srila Prabhupada, He spread these two avatars all over the world. He spread the holy name. He established temples all over the world where the worship of Sri Radha and Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Gaur Nitai, takes place. So these two special avatars of Nama and Archa Vigraha manifested directly as a consequence of Mahaprabhu taking sannyas on this particular auspicious day. Right, yesterday His Grace Rohini Priya Prabhu in the morning Bhagavatam class, he was so wonderfully describing this whole episode of Mahaprabhu taking sannyas. Right, I will not go into all the details, but then Mahaprabhu, when before taking sannyas on this particular Sankranti day, he gives special instructions to all the residents of Navadvip. Right, special and this is the instructions that we can take forward, take back as the message of Makara Sankranti. So Mahaprabhu says, Apana galaira mala sabakare diya, agya kare prabhu sabe krishna gao giya. So Mahaprabhu personally took the garland from his neck and he gave it to all the devotees and said, the first instruction he gave, sing the glories of Krishna, krishna gao giya. And then he says, bolo krishna bhaja krishna gao krishna naam, Krishna vina kehu kichu na bhavyuan. He says, bolo Krishna, glorify Krishna, bhaja Krishna, worship Krishna, gao Krishna naam, chant the holy names of Krishna. Krishna vina keha kichu na bhavina an. Do not think of anything other than Krishna. Then he says, yadi ama prati sneha takhe sabakare, tabe Krishna vyakyarita na gaibe are. He says, if you have any affection for me, yadi ama prati sneha takhe sabakare, if you have little bit of affection for me also, then tabe Krishna vyatirikta na gaibe are. Don't speak of any topic which is contradictory to Krishna consciousness. That is the instruction that Mahaprabhu is giving. And then he says, ki shayane ki bhojane ki baja garane aharnisha chinta Krishna balahavadane. He says, ki shayane, whether you are sleeping, ki bhojane, whether you are eating, ki baja garane, whether you are waking, whether day or night, think of Krishna and chant his names. Like that. Then he says, Emata Shubhadrashti Kare Sabakare Upadesha Kahi Sabe Baleyao Ghare. Says, after giving this instruction, he says, now you may go home. This is the instruction. That how you have to be intensely Krishna conscious by taking shelter of these two aspects of Hari Krishna Nam and Krishna Murti. Lord, as a special form of Archavikra. These are the two special forms in which Mahaprabhu manifests. Right? So, this is the most powerful, the spiritual perspective of understanding this Makara Sankranti. What spiritual empowerment that we can get on this Makara Sankranti day like this. So, basically in summary what we discussed today, we understood that how in the Vedic culture there is nothing called as a holiday, but rather every day is a holy day. Right? And we understood that how the reality can be seen on these three levels, on the physical, metaphysical and spiritual levels. And on a physical level, we understood what the benefits of this Makara Sankranti festival are, that how it brings in the transition of the sun, which brings in the onset of spring, which brings positivity and joy in the entire environment around us and in the human society itself, right? And then on a metaphysical plane, we saw that how this is the day when the sun resolves his conflicts with his son Shani, and you know, it brings in auspiciousness, and it's a symbolic of how we should give up all our grudges with the people around us and create auspiciousness. And we also saw another metaphysical understanding that how Makara Sankranti day is the day when Ganga was brought down by the tapasya of Bhagirath, and his 60,000 ancestors were purified and auspiciousness was created. So Makara Sankranti day is a day when we take bath in this holy rivers for auspiciousness. But then from a spiritual perspective, we saw that what is real auspiciousness from the life of Bhishma Dev. That mood of Bhishma Dev where he lived a whole life tolerating the so-called miseries, and how Krishna as Sharanya Vatsal, he bestowed his blessings at the time of his death, and that determination that Bhishma showed in sticking loyal to the path of Krishna consciousness. And finally, how we can intensify our devotion like Bhishma Dev. We saw that how Mahaprabhu, when he took the sannyas, he gave us these two special avatars as Nama and Ananda, as you know, Sachidananda Rupa, and how by taking shelter of these two forms of the Lord, we can also make tremendous spiritual advancement in our own lives. Like that. So with this, I'd like to end today's discussion. If there are any subjects for discussion, any questions, comments, suggestions, please, I'd like you to share them. Okay. Thank you all very much for your patient listening. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki. Jai. Makara Sankranti Maha Mahotsav ki. Jai. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki. Jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So I request all of you to please now participate in the Sankirtan. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.